thank you very much. I'm honored to be here today as your speaker. If you're having trouble hearing, just raise your hand and I will speak louder. So today we're going to talk about the urological issues facing women. In my practice, I do see men because I also do general urology, kidney stones, erectile dysfunction, just general urology, but predominantly I see mostly women. I'm very interested in female incontinence, voiding dysfunction, vaginal prolapse, pelvic pain, so anything that really faces women. Just to kind of get, when I made these slides, this is from 2012, so some of these slides are a little bit older. The percentages may be a little bit off, but they're not that far off. But nationally, 56% of women voted for President Obama versus 49% of men. Women make up 53% of the voting pool. In 1967, women made up only one-third of all the workers. Today, women make up one-half of all the U.S. workers. We are the primary breadwinners in several households, which is, you know, that's a big change, probably from your generation. So because of the shifting paradigm, women are half of the workers, or changes everything. So we have responsibilities in the workplace, marriage, childcare, elder care, and unfortunately, we always put ourselves last. So this is where I come in. And this is just a little statement, but essentially, we're so busy working with our families, with our work, we don't put ourselves first. So today, I'm going to talk about incontinence, pelvic prolapse, when you feel a bulge, something's dropping, and recurrent urinary tract infections. I'm going to give you a little bit of information about everything, and I welcome questions afterwards. So basically, the bladder stores the urine. That's what the bladder is supposed to do. Normally, it stores the urine, it gets a signal, the urethra relaxes, the urine comes out. The sphincter holds that urine in place. If it's weakened, sometimes it leaks. But this is how a normal bladder is supposed to work. The kidneys constantly filter into the bladder. So the kidneys are always emptying. It's the bladder that holds it. Incontinence is the inability to control the release of urine from the bladder. It can be mild, it can be severe, bothersome, not bothersome. Not all women have it. Some women have it. Men have it too. Young women have it, older women have it, so it affects a range in the population. Stress incontinence, urge incontinence, often you can have both. You can have a mixture of both. It can be functional incontinence, it can be overflow incontinence. These are the types of incontinence. Urge incontinence is the sudden desire to urinate, the inability to prevent that urge from, to stop that urge. You can't get there in time. When I got to go, I have to go. That's what your bladder's saying. When you have a neurological defect, there is a damage in the signaling, and sometimes you can get a sudden bladder contraction. For instance, sometimes when you've had a stroke, if you have MS, if you've had Parkinson's, sometimes you can develop urge incontinence. But you don't have to have a neurologic problem. You can have nothing wrong with you and still have this problem. On the other hand, stress incontinence occurs when you have the leakage that occurs when you cough, when you sneeze, when you shift position. It's some sort of activity that puts intra-abdominal pressure that makes you leak. Oftentimes you have both, and sometimes it's difficult to differentiate. This occurs when some of the pelvic muscles have been damaged, childbirth, hysterectomy, previous surgeries, radiation surgery, muscle injury, hormonal changes. Some women have different types of collagen makeup. Some women don't have that supportive tissue, and some women do. So mixed incontinence is a combination of both. Often, we treat incontinence with surgery, with drug type therapy. Incontinence is one of those things that sometimes you don't tell your doctor about because you're too worried about your blood pressure, the diabetes, pain in the legs, pain. But incontinence is it's a big deal because when you're getting up a lot at night, there's the potential to fall. When you're paying for pads, it becomes very expensive. When it prevents you from doing your activities, from exercising, from going to church, from being with your friends, it's a big deal. Sometimes when you come in and we just go over the history, oftentimes I'll say, wow, how much fluid do you drink? People say, well, I drink a lot of water. Some people really do. You can drink too much water, you can drink too much fluids, and you can be drinking the wrong fluids. Sometimes it's the medications you take. Some people are on muscle relaxers for certain things, or they didn't realize that this medicine sometimes makes you hold on to your urine more. Sometimes hormonal changes are so significant in a woman's body that it causes irritation, which causes problems with leakage. So the first thing that we do is, obviously we do a history. We go over what your medications are. We do an exam, looking at asking you to cough. Sometimes we check how much urine is left in the bladder. We check to see if there's a bulge. Go over your previous surgery history. And also, you know, the main thing is incontinence is a problem when you think it's a problem. Just because the doctor finds it doesn't, you don't have to have treatment for it. Some people are perfectly happy just going on their business. So first we go over bladder retraining. For instance, I may tell you, okay, instead of going every 2 hours to the bathroom, you're going to go on the clock and you're going to time it. You're going to go every hour and we're going to teach your bladder, much as you would do a child, to use the toilet. So we're going to start at an hour, we're going to go to an hour and 30 minutes, 2 hours, we're going to do that to retrain your bladder. That's actually difficult to do, and you really do have to go by a watch. Also, Kegels exercises. We're going to teach you how to do Kegels. It is very difficult to, if someone just says, oh, just do Kegel exercises, you may not have the muscle tone. A lot of people don't know how to do it. They use the wrong muscle. So that's an important thing that we need to teach you. Because if we realize that the muscles are not there or you don't have the ability to do it, you may require something like biofeedback or electrical stimulation where we kind of given a little electrical impulse to those muscles to isolate, to show you what muscles need to be squeezed. And also fluid management and restrictions. Just people say, I drink a cup of coffee. When I find out the cup of coffee is this big, I'm like, okay, let's do this. And then the second line treatment is anticholinergics. Basically what that is medications that are designed that target the bladder. Now, it sounds great and it sounds easy, but so many people can't tolerate these medicines or they have side effects just like any medicine. So there are several medicines out there. The data says they're all the same. So we'll start off doing some samples of medications. With any doctor, a certain medicine may work, but when you go to pay for it, it may be very expensive. So even though a medicine works, the doctors have to keep in mind the cost of medicine. Sometimes we forget. We just say, take this, and you're like, ooh, that was really expensive. So first we try to find a medication that you can tolerate, that you will be compliant with, and that doesn't cost a lot of money. The second thing is estrogen replacement. Now, not all women can do this with history of breast cancer, with being very sensitive to estrogen, but if you can tolerate a cream, esterase cream, it is somewhat beneficial. Esterase cream, I don't have any stock in the company or anything, but it is not absorbed systemically into your system. It's absorbed locally, and it does help with tissue quality if you can tolerate it. Okay, now let's say surgery, let's say that none of the medicines are helping and you want something else done. Well, if you have stress incontinence, a mid-urethral sling is a great surgery that has a very high success rate. Both the American Board of Urology and the American Board of Obstetrics and Gynecology still recommend a mid-urethral sling for urinary incontinence. And essentially what that is, if you can imagine a hammock and the urethra sitting on the hammock in a gentle way, so that the hammock supports your urethra so that when you cough or do a sudden movement, it's going to give it a little bit extra support. Now, several times people get, you know, especially nowadays, people say, well, gosh, it's mesh. You're putting mesh in my body. That's when a little bit longer discussion needs to be had with the patient and with the physician. Not all mesh is bad. I think if you can explain it to the patient and explain when it is bad and who doesn't need it, then it becomes an appropriate thing to do. Not everyone can have it. Not everyone wants it. If you don't want it, but you still want surgery, there are certainly other options. And so it's not like you're up a creek. There are several other options that can be performed. The sling is very successful. It has now been tested for several years. It has been out there. It has very good data. If you have the gotta go leakage and you don't respond to medication and you've tried two and maybe even a third or fourth or fifth, well, at that point, you know, there's probably nothing else medicine-wise you can try. Hopefully you'll get to your doctor soon enough, and there's Botox injections that have been in use now for several years, which is FDA approved, which kind of relaxes the bladder. It's an office procedure that is very well tolerated. It's a procedure, in essence, where you can get Botox, which relax, just like it relaxes your wrinkles, it relaxes your bladder so that it doesn't fire as much. And the downside of it is it's not permanent, so you know, maybe twice a year you have to come in and have the injection redone, or maybe three times a year, but at least during that time you're not taking any medications. And it is covered by insurance. And then if that doesn't work, or maybe you're allergic to the Botox, or you are afraid of having it, there's something called sacral neuromodulation. And what that is it's kind of like a bladder pacemaker. So it's very similar to a cardiac pacemaker, but this is a device that's, we attach a lead onto the nerve that controls the bladder, and we're trying to control how the bladder is functioning so that it's not over-functioning. It's also done in the hospital, but we don't really put people to sleep. We just give them a local anesthetic. So there's other options for incontinence if medications don't work. And it's usually finding something that's targeted towards you. Sometimes we find that people they're not emptying their bladder. Their bladders just do not work. I mean, the bladder is a muscle, and like other muscles, it may fail to work. So we have to offer you different sort of treatments. Another interesting topic that affects several women is pelvic organ prolapse. And essentially what that is, in a nutshell, is, you know, I have a bulge. There's something hanging out down there. You can have it with a hysterectomy. You can have it without, with your uterus in place. So it can affect women who have had surgery and those who have not. Normally, what happens is our organs are kept together by this a nice little shelf or a connective tissue. And as we get older, that weakens. As we have children, that weakens. As we go through menopause, it weakens. So some of the causes are certainly surgery, childbirth, genetics. I mean, your parents could have, your mom could have had it. 50% of women 50 years or older will suffer from some sort of pelvic floor dysfunction. And the lifetime risk for undergoing some sort of surgery for prolapse is 11%. And it's pretty high. What I like to tell my patients is the first thing is, just because you have a bulge, once again, this is something that does not have to be treated. If it doesn't bother you, and if you're not bothered, leave it alone. Don't let someone say, we have to fix it. You don't have to fix it. The next thing is always, the first thing is always, you know, do no harm. So offer the least invasive approach. Offer something like a pessary. A pessary is a device, like the soft plastic device that can be inserted into the vagina to push the defect up. Now, not all women like it. Some women find it just intolerable or uncomfortable, but with some women it works really, really well. And you can be refitted. And the good thing about that is if you make a mistake and you just hate it, it can be removed and you can go on to the next thing or try something else. And then there's surgery for pelvic floor prolapse. And then once again, this is the discussion when you come in, what sort of surgery should you have? Should you have a mesh type surgery? Nowadays, I'm doing several robotic type repairs where we're not using mesh in the vaginas, and that becomes very helpful to women. And people, you know, the other several times we've repaired women who are, you know, in their mid-80s. I mean, otherwise fairly healthy. They've been cleared by their medical doctor, but they don't want to have that quality of life that the vaginal prolapse was causing them to have. They had a significant prolapse. They didn't think anything could be done. But, you know, I think there's always something that can be done. The robotic repair, we use small sites in the abdominal, laparoscopic, telescopic surgery, if you will, small sites, 5 or 6, and we can go in through there. The surgeon controls this device, and it allows you to essentially lift up the problem, the defect, and put it back into its normal location. It is fixed with a piece of mesh. Now people say, well, you're using mesh there. The concept's a little bit different. This surgery has actually been around for years and years and years. It's just the newness of the robot. So the surgery has withstood the test of time with mesh. You're home. Most people go home the next day without a catheter, and it's about a 4 to 6 weeks recovery. It's a bigger surgery if you do come to that point, but it. As you're recovering, you're not having that bulge, and most people are very satisfied with it. The third thing that I think that I see a lot of with women is these recurrent infections. Women come in, and they're just saying, I'm just getting infection after infection after infection. So the first thing that I like to do, obviously, by the time they get to me, sometimes, you know, they usually go see their primary care doctor first or the urgent care, but I always think it's important to get a urine culture. Several times, I know it's difficult, and you just call your doctor and an antibiotic is called in. But in this community that we live in, there's a high prevalence of antibiotic resistance, where that means is the bacteria is not going to be killed with a simple antibiotic, Bactrim or Macrobids. And the only way to know that is to get a urine culture. And what I like to do is I like to get a catheterized specimen because it's a pure specimen, and I can also tell how the bladder's functioning. I can tell residual, so it gives me a little bit more information. It's a little bit more invasive, I understand, just having that catheter put in and out, but it does give us a little bit more information, and it allows us to make an accurate diagnosis of a urinary tract infections. Sometimes, you know, just once again, looking at the diet, looking at behavior habits, can help decrease the number of infections. Sometimes it's putting you on a low-dose antibiotic prophylaxis, and sometimes estrogen therapy. What happens is the vaginal tissue, as we age and go through menopause, that there's a species called lactobacillus. It's a bacteria, and you're supposed to have it. All of us are supposed to have it premenopausal, but as it goes away, when it's gone, it causes the vaginal pH to get higher. The vaginal pH is normally low, it's a low number, but as we get older, it gets higher. And that allows other bacteria, the bad bacteria, to kind of get in there. It has nothing to do with our hygiene or anything like that. It's just because the environment becomes, it harbors this bad bacteria. So sometimes that estrace cream can be protective for that. So that's another use of the hormone cream if you can tolerate it. So, you know, the main thing I think is to be proactive about our health. Women tend to put themselves last. I mean, so many women I talk to, they'll come in, they say, well, I've taken care of my husband, I've taken care of my kids, and now I can't do this, I can't drive anymore because of this problem. And so it becomes certainly an issue for all of us, and we must place ourselves primarily number one, you know, because we do have to do all those things, so we have to keep ourselves in shape. So that's, you know, that's the main thing that I try to do, is I just try to direct you where you need to go, or if you need assistance, or does this need to be done now, does it need to be done later? So I welcome any questions, and I will repeat it so that everyone can hear, and if I didn't mention something, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Probiotic? And the question is, probiotics? Urinary tract infections. The question is prescribing probiotics. There actually is no data that says probiotics will help prevent urinary tract infections, but I do tell my patients to use probiotics. You don't have to get a prescription strength one. You can get something over the counter, but I think it does have beneficial effects, especially if we're dealing with an infection that just keeps coming back. Yes, the question is, there's been several advertisements about the patch that you can put on. The patch is called the Oxitrol patch. It, I guess it used to be a prescription strength medicine, but now it's off prescription and it's available at the stores. I think it's a very viable option. First of all, I think it may be cheaper than some of the medicines that you may have to purchase. I think it does have less side effects. So if you're having a lot of dry mouth from certain medicines, it may be an option for you to try. And they put it on it's at the stores because it doesn't have so many side effects. Otherwise, they'd still keep it at the pharmacy where you'd require a prescription. I think it's a very, very viable option. A couple of things with the patch, it may cause some itching, and there's a way to dose it. But that's a question that you can ask your doctor, and it should have the instructions on the back. But I think it's a good idea. And the question is, do you recommend cranberry capsules? Well, once again, there is no data that says cranberry helps or doesn't help. The capsules are a good idea. I think the capsules probably, to me, are better than the juice, which can not only have a lot of sugar in it, but even if you get the non-sugar juice, it's very acidic to the bladder, and the irritation can cause more frequency, more urgency. So the capsules I'm okay with. But if you look at the data, there is no data that says, okay, this is a proven benefit. Right. So the question is vaginal prolapse and urinary tract infections. Sometimes frequency and urgency develop because the bladder is out of position. So you can have prolapse and have this frequency and urgency forcing you to take a medicine. But sometimes if you correct the actual problem, the frequency and urgency disappears. Not all women are predisposed to infections after sling surgery. I think that's where all the controversy comes in. It's, does this mesh cause infections? Because women see themselves, they say they have higher infections after the surgery. I think, yes, it's a foreign body that's put there, but not all women have infections. That could just be somebody have that particular problem. And it just depends. I mean, should you have it or should you not? I mean, that's at that point you go and you look at you say, what are your different options? Now, with with prolapse surgery, you can have mesh. You can have nothing put in there. You can just have it closed. You can have biologic material. You can go abdominally to fix it. So there's other ways. If you said, well, I really want it fixed, but I don't want mesh. So, you can do other treatments.
Are the other treatments as percentage-wise?
Percentage-wise, if you look at all this data, women are just as well satisfied. I will say that with prolapse, there's such a high chance of recurrence that if you have a mild prolapse or if you're very young, I try to steer people away from surgery. I say just wait till you really want it done, because sometimes if you mess with something that's just slight, it may never get worse and you may have other problems. So part of it is just live with the problem for a little bit. And if you've gotten to that point where you're like, okay, I've lived with it, I don't like it, it bothers me, then we need to do something. But some people are quick to come in and say, I want it fixed. But we shouldn't do that. First, let's explain the problem, what are their options, and then go from there. Yeah. Yeah, the question is about Kegel exercises and when they should be used. Kegel exercises are useful if you have the urge incontinence, that gotta go sensation. If you can use the Kegel to kind of suppress an urge. So when you feel that that sudden urge coming on, typically we tell people to try to do the Kegels. If you don't know how to do them, the first thing I do is try to describe it to someone. So people say, well, how do you describe it? Well, for a man, you can kind of tell him easily. It's like you're trying to prevent passing gas in public. And you tell the woman the same thing, but you have to, it's almost lying down on the on their bed, and you have to kind of get your bottom flush with the bed, laying on the bed, and it's kind of like a drawing up sensation, like you're trying to draw the vaginal area into your stomach. It's very difficult to do because sometimes we just don't have those muscles are intact. Somebody's got to initially teach you. You may be doing it right, you may not be, but sometimes it's just a quick exam and saying, okay, this is how you do it. It'll help with stress incontinence too, coughing, sneezing. If you can do a Kegel before you realize that you're going to sneeze or cough, it could prevent leakage. Right. The question is about Botox and having to wear a catheter. One of the adverse effects with Botox may be urinary retention, where theoretically you could have to wear a catheter. Now, that doesn't happen all the time. When you explain Botox to someone, you say, okay, these are the potential, here are the benefits, but here are also the risks. One of the risks is having to catheterize and having infections. You can give a patient less Botox. So there's you can cut down on the number of units and start there. Now, we've been doing it in our practice. We haven't had anyone in retention. But I also don't start at really high doses. You start at lower doses. Some people, for instance, if they're not emptying their bladder well, they're at higher risk. So kind of, you have to know the person's history. If you're not emptying your bladder and you retain urine, if I do something to make you hold on to it longer, I may put you in retention. I have to tell you ahead of time. If someone's not willing to accept the risk, well, you know, then let's move to something else that doesn't have that risk. So yes, you're right, it can be retention. It's short-lived, meaning that when the Botox wears off, the retention wears off. And probably the retention wears off a little bit sooner than the Botox wears off, but you know, it's a nuisance. Okay, well the wire, which is the sacral neuromodulation, has been out since the 90s. I don't know the exact date, but
okay,
yes.
But it's been out.
It has, yes. And now it's also approved for fecal incontinence.
Okay, the other question about the wire, needed an MRI, there could be some problems, like on your hip,
right?
That area.
Yes, and so that's another concern with the sacral neuromodulation. Who can and cannot have it? Well, you can't have it if you need to have MRIs in the near future or in the future. I mean, you have a magnetic device, you have a battery, it'll ruin the MRI. You can have head MRIs. You can have head on it, but you cannot have body MRI. So that will not be an option for you. So the next option is there's something called percutaneous tibial nerve stimulation, which is a procedure that's done in the office that you come in on a weekly basis, spend 30 minutes in the office, very easy to do, where we try to do it's used for overactive bladder. It's a procedure that some people, it appeals to some people, but some people not, because it requires 12 weeks and it's every week for 30 minutes. But what it does, it's a wire that stimulates the nerve down in your leg, which is an offshoot of the nerve we deal with. So that's another option. And like you said, Botox has been FDA approved for the bladder for several years now. Mm-hmm. How can you tell if you empty your bladder completely? Sometimes you can't tell. We can tell because we'll check a post-void residual. We'll have you come in, have you urinate, either by bladder scan or by catheterization. We'll check and see how much is left over. But sometimes people can tell because they'll come in and say, I went to the bathroom and 20 minutes later I had to go back again and I had just the same amount. Or they'll say, sometimes that's because of frequency, just because of frequency, but sometimes it's because they're not emptying their bladder. Sometimes your legs start swelling. People say, well, I've got this new lower extremity swelling, and we check and we find out, well, the bladder's not emptying, so you're retaining a lot of fluid. So that, you know, sometimes we see people like that, and we make a diagnosis of another issue that may be going on. The question is about the back alignment and affecting incontinence. In the hips. I know for pelvic pain, women who have pelvic floor dysfunction, that really does make, that is a big problem when the hips and the back are out of alignment. I don't think necessarily with incontinence so much, but I think that, you know, if you have pelvic floor issues, anything with pain, that's an important thing that we try to address, especially with physical therapy. If a woman comes in with chronic pelvic pain, I know when I've talked to the physical therapists that I recommend people go to, they say, well, you know, their hips were out of alignment. Sometimes you can't tell that. I couldn't tell that on exam. It's just finding out from having the physical therapist work with them. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate spending the lunch hour with you.